Hi, I'm Sunny Dean.
And I'm Scott Drakeford.
And this is the Publishing Rodeo Podcast. In 2022, we both launched debut novels in the same genre with the same publisher in the same year. But despite having very similar starts, our books and subsequently each of our careers went in very different directions.
That pattern repeats itself throughout the industry over and over. Why do some books succeed while others seem to be dead on arrival?
In this podcast, we aim to answer those questions and many more, along with how to build and maintain an author career.
Everyone signing a contract deserves to know what they're really signing up for. In an industry that loves its secrets, we'll be sharing real details from real people. We'll cover the gamut of life as a Big Five published author, from agents to publishing contracts, finances, and more.
Welcome to Publishing Rodeo this week. We have with us Sam Missingham. And Sam is someone who I have encountered online on Twitter, knowing her first as someone who is an author advocate for many years, who's also worked in the industry for many years, someone who I came to respect from afar as, you know, as a fellow single mum, and who also stands up for lots of things that are very important issues. I follow a lot of the things you're sharing and saying about Palestine and author empowerment. And there was a bookseller article a few years ago, I think, that you'd contributed to with some research about authors being unhappy with the amount of transparency in publishing or the lack of it and things like that. And we were really excited to hear from you and to find that you wanted to come and chat to us in the podcast. So if you could tell viewers who you are and your experience, because you've worked for a long time in this industry.
Weirdly enough, not as long, you know, seeing as I'm 53, probably not as long as most people who are 53 in the industry. So I actually started by working in magazines. So I have worked on all kinds of magazines, what we would call consumer magazines, but also B2B magazines as well. My role on those magazines has always been subscription strategy. So obviously magazines rely on revenue and also advertising revenue. So I was subscription and circulation. I did that for a number of years on weird and wonderful magazines. I worked on Wedding Day magazine, which happened to coincide with splitting up from my husband. I have worked on, you know, magazines about trucking. I nearly had to go to Truck Fest one year to sell subscriptions. You know, I mean, it's been glamorous. It's been extremely glamorous at times. So I worked on all of these different magazines, and I met a guy called Nigel Roby, who employed me in several different publishers, magazine publishers. Then he basically bought the Bookseller magazine. So I had never heard of the Bookseller magazine. I didn't know what it was about. I had absolutely no understanding of what book publishing was. And to be completely honest, if at that point anyone said to me, how does book publishing, like, how do books get into bookshops? I probably would have said something like, are they made out the back of a bookshop, and sort of, you know, because I have no sort of concept of that there were actual publishing companies and there was a business behind those books. I mean, obviously I didn't think about it a lot because it never really crossed my path, and I had no reason to think about it in any depth. So I started working on the Bookseller. It took me a while to work out the difference between a publisher and a bookseller. I did the same job basically, which was circulation marketing, subscription marketing, because it was very reliant on subscription revenue, the Bookseller. It was obviously a great magazine to work on because it has an incredibly clearly defined audience. And then obviously for a B2B magazine, it also then branches out into additional products like events, like conferences. Also, obviously, the Bookseller runs the Nibbies, which are the industry awards. And obviously that generates quite a lot of money because that's very well established. And also, obviously, publishers like it and they like schmoozing. We all know that they love it. They love a schmooze. And so that generates quite a lot of money. That's really sort of how I entered into the industry. At the time, incredibly enamored by anything that, you know, publishers did. I was like, wow, Faber have launched an app and HarperCollins has done a website. And I thought it was all quite, you know, quite exciting and quite sophisticated and blah, blah, blah. And then obviously, once I started working in a publisher, I realized how unsophisticated they actually are. But I actually was incredibly impressed by them from afar, which I think is perhaps part of the smoke and mirrors of book publishing in general. But
I was just going to hop in and say, for Americans who are listening, in the UK, we don't have Publishers Marketplace. I mean, we do obviously have the site. I can sign into it or whatever. And I had an account until recently. But like book deals don't go on it really. So the bookseller, we don't have an equivalent of Publisher's Marketplace, but such as that niche is, the bookseller fills it. That's where our book announcements go. That's where industry news goes. If you want to find out what an agent's doing or what they're up to, you search for them on the bookseller. And that's what it fills for us. And the other thing mentioned is the nibbies, which is like, it's called that because it looks like the nib of a fountain pen. It's an industry book award in the UK. So they give out awards for agents, publishers, imprints, books, authors, all kinds of things. And that just to explain that for context.
Yeah, I didn't know what that was, but I don't really keep track of awards that closely.
Yes, so I worked for the bookseller for 5 years. Then I actually decided to leave because I was fundamentally bored. HarperCollins had just taken on a new CEO, which is a guy called Charlie Redmayne, who is actor Eddie Redmayne's brother, of course.
Oh, yeah.
He basically created a job for me, which was head of events at HarperCollins. So he allowed me to come up with ideas. And this is the best remit I've ever had. So I never could criticize him as an individual, but the best remit I had was head of events, head of author events, just come up with ideas across HarperCollins' entire list, including front list, back list. So if you think about a list like HarperCollins, like any big five publisher, it is so magnificent. Do you know what I mean? It's like utterly magnificent that they, yes. Agatha Christie, who else was it?
George R. Martin.
George R. Martin event.
Hilary
Mantel. They obviously own loads of things like Paddington Bear, Doctor's Views, you know, so children's, they own Mills and Boons, so every romance book. So I had to come up with ideas, which as a creative marketing person who likes to do things that kind of excites an audience, you know, either excites, informs, educates or whatever, it was like literally the most perfect thing.
Sam, I do have a question, since it sounds like you at least started heading up events at Harper. What kind of events did you find had actual return? And I'm particularly interested in any events that maybe you put together for debut or newer authors and not just, you know, George R. R. Martin, because anything you do for or with him is going to look successful. But what worked for, you know, really boosting the profile of a book or an author, and how did you measure that impact?
Well, just to take a step back from that, up until that point, I had worked on events that actually had a commercial imperative, i.e. they had to make some money. Okay, so obviously if you work in B2B magazines or in a B2B business, if you run a conference like a Future Book conference, you have a spreadsheet in this thing called Excel, and you put numbers in there, and you're supposed to end up with a positive number at the, you know, some really basic things. And you really, obviously, as you know, you go through everything and think, can I cut out, you know, I don't want to have, you know, that much spent on lighting. Should we cut from 3 lights to 2 lights on the stage? Could we get away with that? So you go through every single thing. So I landed at HarperCollins and thought I was going to run loads of really commercially successful events. This will, I hope you'll see how insane this was. So then I was given the job of George R. Martin. So George, this was in 2015 or something like that. So Game of Thrones was like absolutely the biggest thing on TV and one of the things, few things that people, you know, were talking about. So I was given George R. Martin. And they said, you've got him for one night in August. So I had 3 months, which as an event organizer, it's not a huge amount of time to deliver an event and invite people and get money in and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it was toned down a little bit, but it still was a huge event. The first event, author event, that HarperCollins had ever made any money on. So I ran it like I ran an event. So I found a sponsor. Never had a sponsor for an event before. And I was like, this is the biggest, like, you know, there are a very small number of authors who you could potentially get sponsors for, like handfuls across every publisher. Jordan R. Martin is one of them right now. We could get sponsors. You know, I got a really quite a sizable sponsorship deal, which they'd never even knew that I could, they could do such a thing. And also didn't know kind of like, well, how does it work? What do we give them in return? Blah, 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 blah. So this is when I started to realize, Scott, this leads on to your question, is publishers run author events for publicity, and secondly, to sell books around publication. week so that they can get a bit, you know, sort of either ahead of publication so they can get that kind of nice uplift for the first week to get into the charts. Those are the reasons to run an event. They don't want to make any money. They have that as part of a budget, which is either publicity or marketing or whatever. As a consequence, because the motivations are different from being in an actual event organizer, which you want to make money out of your events, they do crazy things. So when they have, if I hadn't been there for a George R. Martin, this is an example, this is real, happened. They took George R. Martin to something like, I think, Hay Festival. And they sold tickets for £7 each or £5 each or something pathetic. And they were really excited because the tickets all sold out within like an hour. And I was like, of course they did. Like, as an event organizer, you don't want your tickets to sell out immediately. That's the point, is you price it so that, you know, and this is actually what happened. We priced the tickets for the event that I ran at £45 each because it was like we had cosplayers. You've got the biggest author, we're in an amazing venue, and it's worth the money because, you know, this guy's a rock star currently. And we sold them at £45 a ticket, you know? And obviously that is not going to work for a debut author, clearly. So I suppose part of the answer to your question is the reason why events in general for authors are really boring and really limited is because of what the motivation behind them. There is an organisation actually in the UK called Fame Productions who are doing bigger events. So they are doing what I did for George R. Martin. So they are cherry picking the sort of rock star authors and running proper big events and I guess making money out of them. So that's quite a good. But publishers don't have any capacity. They don't have any event people. They rely on publicists who are incredibly overworked to find a venue next, you know, Thursday because the author's launch is then. Can you get some warm white wine and some plastic cups? And maybe should we put some post-its on the wall or something so people can write on post-its? You know what I mean? It's very small thinking because of how, not because the people are small thinking, but they are overworked. They have too many authors to deal with. I would say, in general, events are not a way to sell books for debuts. They are a way to get publicity, which will hopefully lead to book sales and all of the things that publicity brings.
I was going to say, we were having this conversation. I went to Gareth Brown's event to chair for him a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that we were talking about with the booksellers and the publicists is how hard it is now to fill book events for authors. And I think he had a good turnout, about 60 people, which is a lot for a debut. But, you know, the booksellers telling me quite often they give authors the chance to just cancel the event if there's less than 15 people showing up.
Yeah.
And we were talking about it. It's like, well, have they considered the fact that maybe these events aren't very popular because they're fucking boring? Like,
yeah.
I mean, like most of the time, do you know what I mean? And she was saying, oh, you know, publishers kind of have this idea that a book is a wine event or it's a sit and listen to the author talk pompously for 2 hours while we all feel awkward because we don't like being pompous. And I think Gareth was very engaging, a lot of fun on that particular event, and he's a good speaker and that really helped. But yeah, it was very, you know, it reminded me of like indie authors and poets who don't have publishing bucks behind them. So if they want to do book launches, they actually have to be fun and they'll have like raffles and drinks and it's just like, it's a party and it's fun. And guess what? People turn up.
I mean, I, you know, after speaking to a lot of different authors at all different stages, certainly a book for a debut author who wants to have, and this is, I think, what, you know, obviously as an author, it's worth admitting to yourself, or at least answering the question, you know, what does success look like for you? What are the things that you have in your mind, or maybe in your subconscious, that you actually wanted to tick off that says, I'm an author, I'm a published author? One of them often is to have an event in a bookshop. Another one might be, obviously, well, hopefully will be to see your book for sale in a bookshop or a supermarket or wherever. Yeah. Another one might be, you know, to have some sort of publicity. So, you know, if actually that's what you want and that's what your publisher is willing to do, great. But let's not kid ourselves that you're selling tons of books at that. You're not.
For publishing, I mean, just coming into someone like I do not have industry connections. I went the cold query route. There are some areas where I have privilege, mostly in my education. There are some areas where I had huge disadvantage, mostly in, I guess, the not knowing people, not living in London, not having money and so on. And there's a part of me that wants to believe that your connections in that don't matter. But the more that I see of trad, the more I feel like there is an element to which, I guess, class and connections do matter, although I don't want them to, because I feel like a lot of the events that we do in publishing for trad, there is much about introducing you to the right people and keeping you, if the right people like your book and push it, they can make it a success. And that seems to be a successful strategy for some authors. I just wondered if you had more insight on that particular area.
Yeah, I mean, I think the industry likes to pretend or, you know, kid itself that that's not the case, that you have to have contacts and blah, blah, blah. And I absolutely think some authors go through the slush pile process. Of course, there are loads of examples of authors that have gone through this incredibly torturous process of being rejected by agent after agent after agent after agent, and then, you know, out on submission, blah, blah, blah. Of course, there are lots of examples of people who break through like that. But let's be honest, then go and have a look at, you know, the people who are in the top 20, and the people who are, you know, journalists. Do you think they go through that process? No. People with big platforms, do they go through that process? No, of course they don't. People in publishing who get publishing deals, so they don't go through the process. We know that for sure. Celebrities, do they go through that process? No. So actually, it's only a subsection of authors that go through that torturous process, and they pretend that everyone goes through it. Well, it's just clearly not true. You know what I mean? It's clearly not true.
There's another podcast I won't mention by name, but it does have a celebrity author on it who sometimes talks about his publishing experiences. And some of what he says is quite good and I quite enjoy it, and it's very entertaining. But he does sometimes say things like, oh yes, being a celebrity makes no difference to being acquired. And I just have to kind of either laugh out loud or go have a drink, because...
I read something today, I probably retweeted it actually, which was something about, like, you know, you don't know your privilege because you just don't see it. And I mean, this is how I think about it. And this is actually what I think about class. And obviously, as a person who met people who went, you know, in publishing, the boss of HarperCollins went to Eton and, you know, was from this incredibly privileged background. And that's very kind of common, you know, that there are people from very privileged background. My view is they go through life and the doors are open for them. And not only are the doors open for them, they don't know there are any doors. Okay? Whereas the rest of us are kicking and screaming at the doors and trying to push through, you know, whatever pain point that happens to be, to try and sort of make it. So, yeah, I think, of course, class and privilege, or put it this way, of course, privilege and connections is going to make this process a lot easier. Yes. And it, you know, if anyone in publishing says otherwise, then it's just bullshit. I'm sorry, it's just utter bullshit.
Yeah, I have two thoughts there. One is that it hadn't really occurred to me until this conversation just how backwards some of the expenditures that publishers do greenlight, like all these small author events or sending authors to be on a panel or whatever, you know, at an already existing event, are really backwards. And they're an attempt, like you said, at author care, but they're really the opposite, because they are giving away any leverage that they could be bringing to bear, and instead trying to assuage the author's ego to no real great effect, where, you know, maybe I shouldn't be giving publishers good ideas for free, but think about if a publisher, instead of all of this ineffective bullshit that they put together, had a once a year, you know, say in Sunny in my situation, Tor Fest, where, you know, Tor put together something of actual value to readers and authors and pumped the books that they had coming out that year and actually got reader eyes on all of the books they were putting money and effort and time into.
Like Golan's Fest.
Is that a real thing? I don't know.
That is a real thing in the UK. Yeah. It's called Gollancfest, and it's basically they have a festival one day for their authors, and you can kind of attend and chat to them. And who's Goldsborough do one that they're owned by my agency, and they do like a fantasy in the court thing. And actually, Nick Binge and I are trying to get a similar one set up independently with Waterstones in the north. We were going to call it It's Strange Up North and do that kind of similar thing. But, you know, there is a world outside London, though. Not everyone in the UK realizes that. So.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Sonia, you should definitely. I'm so sorry. Go ahead, Sam.
Absolutely, Sonia, do that. And I will completely help you and boost it in any way that I can, by the way. So definitely do it. And the thing is, this is sort of, and not that I particularly want to talk about Empowered Author, but that is actually literally what the Empowered Author was motivated by, which is to give authors the ability to come up with ideas and do things on their own. So the example I would give, Mark Edwards, who is a crime author, he doesn't have launch events, so he's probably had 15 books out or 20 books out, something like that. He runs all of his launch events on Facebook. So he's now so his readers are so used to him doing these events, and he does like prize draws, you know, he is kind of drinking, he's, you know, sent out different things to some of his readers ahead of time. I mean, he has refined this event. So, and like, he will sell like tens and tens, potentially hundreds of books as a consequence of these Facebook live events. And because his readers find it a fun night, he makes it a fun night. Like, why would you go in a bookshop and have like the 25 friends that you've insisted come along who don't really want to, who, you know, why would you do that if you can do something yourself? And like you said, it's sort of, I am absolutely all for authors joining forces, doing much more interesting events. And don't get me wrong, I think literary festivals absolutely have a place. They really do have a place. And but I, when I look at things, and I suppose genre is probably guilty of this, and there's probably like, you know, 15 crime festivals, for example, in the UK, maybe even more. I, you know, you see kind of the same name of authors on there over and over again. And I think actually they just like going there and hanging out with their mates. It, you know what I mean? And that, it, to me, that is a perfectly valid reason for an author who might want to go to a festival. I think if you're, if you understand the motivation behind it, that's fine. But you're also not going to sell hundreds of books at a literary festival, even a big literary festival. So really, when you think of what's involved in getting there, especially for people like us who are single mums, and you know, those sort of coordinating involved in trying to physically go somewhere for a night or two nights, what's the point if you're not going to sell tons of books or at least meet loads of your readers or potentially new readers? So... but I always feel like sci-fi and fantasy, they're sort of the cons that you have do seem to be quite successful for authors. Am I?
I mean, so British Fantasy Con here, I think in the past they've had money troubles. We have insufficient people attending, that I think sometimes costs are having to be heavily subsidized and attendance is not paying the way. A friend was telling me how he went abroad for like a book festival in a different country and found a very, very different atmosphere. People were really keen to be there, really long lines. It was really engaging. I've heard that from people going to Asia as well. So I think even though most of the festivals and cons are in the UK and US, I do think that there's an element where at least the way they run is a bit tired just because of the format is very restrictive. And I think the way it facilitates discussion often feels stilted and a bit forced. And I don't know. It's just, I think they could do with a little bit. I think your biggest challenge is to make things engaging so that people want to go. Like, this is why if I do ever do a book launch, because I didn't do one with my first book, I would just make sure it's fun, because I just think getting people to come is like the biggest challenge.
Exactly.
Getting them to show up.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a smaller author with, you know, nearly zero built-in audience, the idea of going to a bookshop and setting up for a signing or a reading or any sort of launch party is just, that is my nightmare. Why would I do that? You know, like host 10 of my family and nobody else shows up. Like it just doesn't make sense.
It's a complete waste of time. That's what I think. It's, you know, it's, and, you know, to go back to obviously the self-published authors who obviously they to, I mean, certainly when they're more established, they can get their books in bookshops. But in general, they don't have their books in bookshops. They're only selling through, obviously, Amazon and other online retailers. So actually, they're cultivating all of their readership, their audience, their their potential readership and their actual readership. And they are doing that all online.
I'm just curious, and maybe this is a chance for you to pitch the Empowered Author. What's your role with these indie authors, and what does that look like? I'm also curious to know whether you work with trad authors as well, but mostly I want to hear about what you've done.
Scott's not had a good experience with publicists,
I think. I am leading into that, yep.
No two authors are the same or have the same two issues or challenges or, you know, so obviously I have worked with business authors who really need to develop their platform as a business expert. You know, I have worked with, as an author who came to one of our workshops who is an expert, runs a podcast on looking after houseplants and had published with an indie press who didn't particularly do a great job with her, a book about caring for houseplants. So obviously that's a niche that requires a certain type of, and she required a certain type of thing to get to her readers. So, yeah, so, all, you know, there are no two authors that have come to me that said, actually, I basically have the same problem as that guy or that girl. Can you do the same thing that you did for them? It just doesn't work like that. So I would say marketing in terms of the skills that I have would be looking at an author's platform, looking at what they're currently doing. I mean, this is certainly something my partner Katie does as well. And she will look at, you know, all of the boring stuff as well, like keywords and metadata, your blurb on Amazon, your website, is that effective for you? And then give you a complete analysis. That's the marketing bit. The publicity bit is different, because the publicity bit is obviously about getting you exposure and interviews and blah blah blah. And again, a good publicist should very much respond to what you're trying to achieve, not just give you a kind of blanket, oh, I know, you know, half a dozen sci-fi, you know, influencers who I'll approach. So yeah, does that answer the question? It's sort of a bit random.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm curious, do you find the same activities are valuable for trad published authors? Do you work with any or many trad published?
The one I just worked with was traditionally published. And I mean, again, well, this is something which has happened is I have been approached, and very often I will speak to trad authors ahead of their first book coming out. So I would think probably if I could say the absolute most value anyone could get from me would be to speak to me a year ahead of your first book coming out, and I will explain to you what should happen and what you could potentially do to get yourself in as strong a position as possible for your book, first book to come out, and what you can, you know, because what you could ask of your publisher. So obviously you should have a marketing plan at some point, should have a publicity plan. And then to go through with me and go, okay, this is what they're going to do. This is who they're going to approach. What could you do? So a good example being, you know, if they're going to approach certain, you know, influencers or fantasy or genre websites that, you know, obviously talk about your genre, you know, as an author, you could still potentially approach your local press, your local radio, your things that they're not necessarily going to do for you. Or indeed, you could go through every contact that you have in LinkedIn and think, okay, how could that person help me? They might have contacts or blah. Do you know what I mean? So actually, part of the issue is authors just don't know what to do. You know, it's like they don't know where to start with these things. It's like, actually, it's a lot easier if someone like me says, okay, here are five things you can absolutely do. It's not going to piss your publisher off. It's not going to step on their toes. It's, you know, and you amplify everything that they do. So as an author, you feel like, okay, I'm doing something good here. I've set up my website. I've set up my author newsletter, whether that's a Substack or whatever. I have some sort of idea of what content I'm going to create, because obviously a good book marketer can work with you on that. And then even, you know, even down to, I would say, there are, you know, you could spend all kinds of time, like, going, like, this is an example. If you were a romance author and you lived in Surrey or whatever, you know, wherever, and if someone's like, well, I don't really know, what could I actually do research that would be kind of useful that my publisher definitely won't do? So you could say, okay, well, for starters, if you want local readers, go to your Surrey bookshop. So go into your local bookshop and say blah, 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 blah. Now go to all of their social media and look at who follows them. Because chances are, you know, your local bookshop is followed by people who live locally. So follow a few people on there, start building some connections. Go to the Romantic Novelists Association social media and look at all of the people they follow, but also who follow them. And spend some time going through them and thinking, oh, okay, that person could, you know, that blogger or whoever might be quite useful. Go through a process of doing a bit of research for that, come up with 20 useful people that you might want to then go to their website, get their email address and potentially email them. That, you know, there are all kinds of little tips and things that I feel like every publisher could tell their authors to go and do some of this kind of granular stuff that could be really useful. Like, who talks about books in your local radio show? Find their name, get their email address, email them, sell them you've got a book, you know what I mean?
I do know, Sam. I know very well. I'll tell you what it looked like from my perspective, because I went through exactly this, right? And going back to your the discussion of class, that's a really interesting topic, because I, especially when I was published and before, I quit to homeschool our children while my wife pursues her career more, I guess, frees her up to go into management. I was definitely what I and most people, I think, would consider a fairly privileged person, right? Like, I had worked to a pretty solid spot in my corporate career. And I went through, and we talked before we went on air about what my, you know, lead up to publication looked like. And that I could sense my own doom coming. And so I looked around for PR people, right? And most people in the industry said, yeah, it's not usually worth it. And I can't really recommend it. You know, my own agent said, I can't really recommend it. But if you really want to do it, I do have some resources I can have you talk to. So I talked to legit PR people, you know, that were all ex industry, and had the right resume, et cetera, and who were for a fee more than happy to work with me, right? The cheapest that I encountered was $8,000 for a 12 to 16 week engagement prior to publication. And the more expensive end went to $16,000 for that same period, you know, a 12 to 16 week period before launch. Now, the issue I encountered is that, one, from the author's perspective, all of these people have the right resume, et cetera, and I'm sure are helpful. But when I started asking questions like, okay, so, you know, here's my situation with my publisher. Here's the kind of deal I'm on. I'm not seeing anything coming from them and I'm not getting any real answers. What can you do? Like, can you fill those gaps? You know, I was looking for a concrete answer of, can you make up for what I'm not seeing from my publisher? And their answer was always like, well, we try really hard. It's like, okay, but like, you want $8,000 or in some instances, $16,000. I could go buy a car for this, you know, like, you want a fuck ton of money. Like,
you have to sell on a trad deal to get that $8,000.
Yes, correct.
About 8,000 copies.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I've talked about it before on the podcast, so this isn't new, but I ended up going with someone who was very new to the the freelance PR space and had been very deep in trad publishers, you know, the ones that were relevant to my space, et cetera, and had done work with some authors who really blew up beyond what they should have. So I thought, okay, I found like a really great one to go with. But then what I found is that all of the efforts that they recommended and all of the info they provided, et cetera, was completely useless because it depended on at least a minimum level of buy-in from my publisher that I did not get. So that's why I ask about the value of PR and whether you work with people who are trad versus indie, because in my opinion, and again, this is colored by my singular experience, right? And we've talked a lot also about how everyone's experience is very dependent on their editor, on various minute decisions made over the course of your publication, etc. But it does seem like, from my perspective, that these kind of efforts and engaging with somebody like you is more effective if you are either indie and have some good indication of some good understanding of who your target market is, right? Because if you're indie, you have a high ROI on any given copy you sell, and you have pricing power, all that. Or in trad, it does seem like, you know, you might be able to engage the services of somebody who's really knowledgeable like yourself and the people who are on the empowered author group and site for services. But there does seem to need to be that minimum buy-in from a publisher. And I still don't think there's an answer for that group that signs a deal. Yeah. And isn't destined for at least some amount of support.
I would actually back that back to you, because ultimately, I think what is expected of traditionally published authors is not really that different in reality to what is expected or what self-published authors do. So obviously, depending, you know, especially if you're new.
Yep.
So obviously, if you're a brand name author, you get great deal and publishers are going to bend over backwards and they're going to put buy posters on the underground and blah, 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 blah. Just to clarify the sort of difference from, you know, of publicity and marketing. So publicity, a publicist role is to look after the author, to get you author events and to get you press coverage and reviews. Yeah. So that's what a publicist will do for you. A marketing person will help you get to a point where you can send out your author newsletters, well, or they will do that for you potentially. I mean, it's not something I would advise necessarily. I think it's much better to be doing all as much of it as yourself, that your website works for you, that your blurbs are right, that you, obviously, one of the things obviously indie authors will do is spend money on advertising, whether that's to send people directly to Amazon or to send people to your newsletter sign up so you can start building up your you know, all kind of subscriber list. So a marketing person will actually do practical things for you, but, and this is the thing that I think I probably talk to authors most frequently about, is that it is not, they are not short-term kind of successes. If you are building a newsletter, that will take you years to do. If you're building up your social media following to do it well and authentically, that will also take you years to do before you start seeing like significant returns on things. Obviously, people could go away, spend money on advertising, and that's a slightly different thing. But, you know, the marketing is about building you, and this is certainly what, you know, me and Katie both do, is about putting you in a strong position to have a career as a writer. So a publicist is about getting, you know, literally getting you something in, you know, a newspaper or in a trade, you know, a genre specific site or whatever, Or engage with a TikToker or a BookToker for one particular book, but it's kind of the moment, you know what I mean? And definitely also all of those things do lead to your author brand. So obviously if you get loads of coverage in all different places, people talk about you everywhere, perfect. But you still need your base as an author to take with you, to keep building your subscriber list, to keep engaging with your readers, and you take them with you wherever. So that's what I would say. And I think that's probably something a lot of authors kind of get mixed up. And if you are a new author, I would not recommend you getting a publicist, because it's not easy to get you events because you don't have any readers yet. You're not known. It's not easy to get you publicity. Every publicist that I know, they will, of course, they will say to authors, I will try my best. I'll do everything that I can. I can't make any promises to get publicity. The most established publicists in the world with the biggest authors, they can't guarantee coverage, even for the biggest author. They can't guarantee it because it's based on a journalist saying yes, or a reviewer or a previewer or whatever. You know, they cannot guarantee that. Whereas marketing is about doing solid things that, you know, you can do and that do have an outcome, and you build on them. That's what I would say is the difference between publicity. That's why I would not spend my money on publicity. It is a long game. We know this is not, very few authors are incredibly successful with their first book, even their second, even their third. All of those big name authors, you know, the Ian Rankins and the Margaret Atwoods and whoever, you know, they were at a time where they were publishing 5 to 10 books without really seeing any success before they then had their breakthrough book. So, you know, again, that's part of what I think publishing should communicate to authors at the earliest stages. So actually keep writing, you know, keep as focused as you can on writing. That's your best marketing tool. And the best thing for your readers is to keep putting great books out there, you know, and in the time that you do have, doing things that are effective for your readers.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you. Could I ask you to plug yourself, Sam, actually, since we're talking about Empowered Author, and just tell people where they can find you and a little bit about what you do to as our wrap up.
Yes,
I'm aware it's getting towards 10.
If you're an author traditionally published or self-published, please find theempoweredauthor.com. You can sign up to a newsletter there, which I personally think is the best newsletter for authors. It lists, you know, everything of interest that I find in the month, with book marketing advice or trends that you should know about, with some examples and a little bit of kind of commentary from me on what is the current kind of thinking. I think it's a really good free newsletter, so definitely get that. Find us on Facebook. I've just launched something called the Creative Archive, which I think is the only thing of its kind, which has 300 book marketing creative assets. So things like unboxing videos in different genres, pre-order campaigns, ads, Instagram ads, Facebook ads, Amazon ads. So you can search across different genres and get ideas from established authors and think, oh, I want to run a 99p campaign. What could I make that look like? So you could then go on to my 99p page and see all kinds of examples across genres of different authors who've been successful. That's something else you could go and look at. So, and basically just join us, because Katie Sadler, who I work with, works a lot more one-to-one with authors than I do, and actually is much, much better at it than I am. I'm at a stage where I'm trying to concentrate on building up my business, The Empowered Author, and I have a new book talker type thing coming quite soon, and that's what I'm sort of putting my energies into.
That sounds absolutely amazing, and thank you so much for joining us and giving us your time, and hopefully there's some advice there that people can kind of sift through, and because I know that's a question that comes up a lot, as people ask a lot about hiring publicity and marketing, and it's not something I've done, so it was good to get a different perspective on that, and just looking back across your career.
Well,
and
good luck to all the authors, listening in, because it is not easy. And I think, you know, if you take away one thing, I think it's, you know, think of the long game. Ultimately, don't put all of your priorities into, you know, your first book. I see people on authors on TikTok crying because their first book is not on the New York Times bestseller list and all kinds of crazy things like that. You know, think of the long game. Think, you know, 3, 4, 5 books before really you are, and you know, you've established yourself, and then you should start. It should start making sense ultimately. But you know, reach out to people like me and Katie if you want any advice. And yeah, I mean, pretty much everything I do, we do kind of freely. And if you then want to sort of do one-to-ones with us, we can do that too. But actually, most of it you get freely from us in either the Facebook group or in the newsletter.
You've been listening to the Publishing Rodeo Podcast with Sunny Dean and Scott Drakeford. Tune in next time for more in-depth discussion on everything publishing industry. See you later.